In July of 1965, as a tiny octagonal spacecraft swooped across the Martian surface, my father, who had just turned 18, was standing tall on a humid, hardwood forested hill in Appalachia. There on the edge of Viper, Kentucky, below 100 kilometers of nitrogen and oxygen, under the Kármán line, the exosphere and the Van Allen belt, beneath the great, vast vacuum of space, a small natural gas company had sent a bulldozer up a holler and had set about carving out a flat spot for drilling. On the days my father managed to drive the old Jeep through the creek bed without flooding the engine, he joined an overalls-clad illiterate crew in digging ditches and laying pipe, occasionally carrying the casing for the drill head. He'd hoped to spend the summer as a fledgling assistant to the company geologist. But within 2 weeks, every available worker had been sent to the hillside. The news about the world's first Mars mission, Mariner 4, came by way of the Courier Journal, the newspaper out of Louisville. It arrived on a truck that twisted along the deeply gouged mountain roads, past the coal camps, past Hazard High School, and made its way into the small downtown, which was bound like a bobby pin by the North Fork of the Kentucky River. That morning, my grandfather had picked up the newspaper from Fouts Drug. He'd tucked it under his arm on his way to work at the health department. As a medical technician, he inspected the Cold War-era bomb shelters that dotted the mountain ridges to make sure the food stocks were safe, and drew blood to test for syphilis before young couples got married. He took pride in the fact that everyone in town called him Doc. He wasn't a doctor, but he did give penicillin shots throughout the hills of eastern Kentucky, down in Gilly, up in Typo, in Slemp and Scuddy, in Happy, Yadis, and Busy. When my grandmother wasn't giving perms, she would help out. She liked running the X-ray machine. It was still muggy later that evening as my grandfather meandered up Broadway, a street that was anything but broad, a single paved lane that fell steeply into backyards teeming with kudzu. He walked into a house that hung like a bat to the side of the ravine, leaving the Courier Journal in the attic bedroom, which was spacious now that 4 of the 6 kids had left home. His lanky, wide-eared child, his youngest son, would also leave at the end of the summer, heading 2 hours west across the steep, forested slopes to attend Berea College. My grandfather put the paper on the quilt, where my father was sure to find it, next to his popular science magazine, right beneath a poster of the pockmarked moon. My father had been spellbound by the idea of the mission, NASA's chance to photograph the planet most similar to Earth. As the mountain town rotated into darkness that Wednesday, my father climbed the steps, aching and exhausted, and he saw the headline. Above the fold, between a picture of Willie Mays and an article on Vietnam, was what he'd been waiting for. Mankind, through Mariner, reaching for Mars today. He smiled and fell into bed as he read. Today, the fingertip of mankind reaches out 134 million miles to Mars, almost touching the only other body in the solar system widely suspected of harboring life. On the other side of the country, in a canyon north of Pasadena, an eager crowd had gathered on the campus of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Inside JPL's Von Kármán Auditorium, intertwined cables, thick and vaguely subterranean, unfurled from a cluster of television cameras and snaked across the floor to the vans outside. Radio from all over the world was hooked in by relay, and the Brits were poised to broadcast a live television feed, having leased a full 2 minutes of time from the early bird satellite. There were 37 phones in varying states of use, 36 within the press bank, and one sitting atop a desk as part of a small fake office where the TV broadcasters could be filmed.